We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everybody, and welcome to another edition of Dynasty Tradecast on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by the Blue Wire Network and our friends over at Underdog Fantasy. No longer your home for best ball. They will be in January, February, but now your home for pick'em. You can pick overs, unders, pit players against each other. There's so many fun things to do with Underdog during the season. You thought, hey, it's the season, like, you know, Underdog is gonna go. No, it's not. You'll hear more about it later, but awesome stuff is going on over at Underdog Fantasy. So, week one is in the books, Daniel. Week one is in the books, Dan Sanyo. And there are lots of storylines from week one. We have injuries, we have breakouts, we have busts. So, we had a bit of a boom-bust episode, but we'll start off with some of the bigger injury notes and how that's impacting. You know, it's difficult because, you know, injuries have a more definitive impact on redraft values. You know, you see that Dak is going to be out for 4 weeks, and it's like, okay, that's, you know, X percentage of the season. But how do we value those stints of time off in Dynasty? So we'll start off with Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott expected to miss about at least a month with his hand injury. He also was awful. Like, I don't know whether it was that the Bucs were good or the Cowboys offense was anemic or both. But even when Dak was out there playing, it was not a good Cowboys offense.
Yeah, not ideal. Starting with the injury, obviously a fractured thumb, not good for a quarterback who needs that part to actually deliver the football. Part of me wants to believe that there was something wrong with him, like, all game, and then just maybe the last second, that's when the injury kind of was more noticeable. But whether or not that's true, they were just outright bad. Mike McCarthy needs to go, but it feels like he's comfortable being a Jerry Jones puppet, as Jason Garrett was. So bad coaching, bad playing. It's going to be a tough month or so for the Cowboys, especially without Dak Prescott. You know, the passing game was shambles. The running backs looked bad. It was just all around, aside from Micah Parsons, pretty much all around bad performance from the Dallas Cowboys. So as far as missing the time for Dak, I don't think it's, we need to consider this like a lost season. I do think he'll be back. I would say within 6 weeks, which is, yeah, that sucks to miss, but you can find a stopgap quarterback for your fantasy squad in the meantime. If it's two quarterback, you know, maybe you move off of Dak for someone with a little less value and gain a little depth. Maybe you do something like Dak for, as dare I say, Carson Wentz and a decent piece for maybe a team that isn't competing this year, who just had Carson Wentz sitting around because nobody else wanted him. So I'm not going all the way to, like, lost season for Dak. I think he'll be back and I think he'll be fine. We just need to know that this Cowboys offense is going to be fine before we make any huge leaps.
Yeah, and fantasy wise, I think that the bigger impact isn't Dak. The bigger impact is Lamb and Schultz. Like, obviously, the Cowboys are still going to have to pass the ball with Cooper Rush, or, you know, if maybe they take a peek at Garoppolo, see what happens there. But I think that, you know, it's going to be hard to start CeeDee Lamb and Dalton Schultz in the meantime. Like, until Cooper Rush shows he's any semblance of an NFL quarterback, which he has never done in his career, I think that you kind of got to sit those guys out. As much as, you know, in redraft, you took CeeDee Lamb in the second, third round. You took Dalton Schultz in the sixth, seventh round. Like, you might have to just sit them down. I guess, I know that we're a dynasty show, but what are you doing with Lamb and Schultz in redraft? Are you just sitting them on the bench for now?
Well, I'm always a believer of start your studs, and having Cooper Rush throwing the football isn't going to be good for those guys, but we trust them to be the playmakers that not only were they drafted in the NFL to be, but drafted in fantasy to be. So I'm, in most cases, probably still starting them unless my draft went my way and I was able to get serviceable guys in the, you know, 10th to 16th round that can step in and start. You know, maybe you took someone like Curtis Samuel late. Now he's looking to be a little more formidable. There's all sorts of options. You can always play the waiver wire a little bit to find some extra help, but for the most part, it's hard to not start your studs, especially when they're that highly drafted, regardless of who's playing quarterback.
Yeah, so I from a dynasty perspective, I do think that there's not much change in value here, other than if you want to make a move, try and, you know, pick up some additional depth or something like that for a quarterback that is still currently playing. I don't know about the whole buying high on Carson Wentz theory, but, you know.
Well, I think it's less about buying high on Carson and more about finding reasonably priced quarterback points, because his value obviously is going to have gone up a little bit, but it was dirt prior to this week. So I still think he's going to be very, very reasonable, especially if you can find that match where the team that has him doesn't really need him and doesn't necessarily want the points, but they're thinking, hey, if I can upgrade my quarterback for 2023 and beyond, and maybe they believe Dak Prescott is that upgrade, you know, that could make sense for both teams. And obviously we're not out here always trying to rip folks off. And that wouldn't be the case in that scenario, depending on what the extra piece was. I'm not trading Dak for Wentz one for one, obviously.
No, sure. Yeah.
But I do think something like that, or maybe you go older, maybe you swap Dak and you go get like Matt Ryan and basically the full value of Dak on top in another piece, because, you know, at least Matt Ryan was throwing the football and stacking up yardage. I think the touchdowns will come. I don't know about the efficiency, but the touchdowns will come because they have enough playmakers and that defenses have to worry about like a Jonathan Taylor. So it's early, it's interesting, but the Cowboys, aside from maybe the running backs for me right now, are holds. I will say that if anyone is still chasing Tony Pollard, I'd probably be okay moving him at this stage. That they're just going to get the box stacked on him all game, every game for the next 4 to 6 weeks, and they're going to get absolutely obliterated. And even when Dak comes back, this running game hasn't been what it was. The line isn't what it was. So I know this was a Dak portion, but I think a Cowboy segment overall, I think the running backs would be really the only thing I would actually be okay selling at market value or even a little bit low on, because I have a lot less faith now than I did coming into the season.
Yeah, the positive case for Ezekiel Elliott was that he was going to be a high-volume player, an inefficient player, but in a very good offense. And now, if you have an inefficient player in a bad offense, that's not going to be conducive to fantasy points.
And the selling point is going to be volume, because we're going to assume if they have to start Cooper Rush or whoever they go find from free agency or a practice squad somewhere, that they're going to be running the ball 40 to 50 times because they don't trust anybody to throw the football. Now, if they go get Jimmy G, it's a different situation, because I think that, as from a throwing perspective, it's probably a lateral move from Dak. You know, I don't think that offense falls off that much if it's Jimmy G, but I think it's very different with essentially anyone else.
And let's move on to Keenan Allen. Doesn't appear to be a serious injury. Hasn't been ruled out for week two, but Brandon Staley said it's not looking good. So let's use this as an opportunity to kind of talk about the more short-term injuries, you know, doubtful for a week, maybe 2 weeks. Like, how does that impact your dynasty value? Is it really nothing? Like, in any time you can do, you know, market value for market value, you're going to do it on these players and you'll sacrifice a week or two of production. Like, what are your thoughts on a Keenan Allen type player where he's going to miss a week or two?
The Keenan Allen bet, I think, is probably I'm okay with selling at this stage. He's 30. It's going to be a soft tissue thing. It's going to probably linger at, you know, at that age. They don't exactly heal up the way that they did when they were 22 to 24. Not to say he's ancient by any means, but these injuries kind of have been lingering a little bit. So I think if you can find a contender that probably doesn't need the points right this instant, and maybe they have a highly drafted wide receiver like a Dotson or even a Christian Watson, you know, you'd be able to make those deals super, super easy with a contender. And you'd probably be able to get a decent amount on top. Even going and getting someone like Jameson Williams, I think, would be a really nice swap. I think there's plenty of young receivers to be had that maybe aren't producing right away or are potentially injured. You know, there's a lot you could do with someone like Keenan Allen, who is historically great fantasy wise and obviously in the NFL, one of the best. And the pairing with Justin Herbert is huge. So, you know, there's a lot to be chasing in a Keenan Allen for a contender. And unless you are contending, I'd probably just hold, but because those points will be back, they're going to be back. It's not going to be like he's out for the season because of a hamstring. He'll be back. But if you're you know, a rebuilding team and it kind of sucks to take a little bit of hit on the value now when you could have traded him in the offseason to a contender, I think I'm okay just kind of getting out from underneath it and taking a hit on value if you have to. I don't love selling below market, but in some cases, especially with 30-plus-year-old wide receivers who are injured, I'm okay taking a bath in a little bit of value.
And our next player is a guy who's been put on IR, expected at least to miss at least 8 weeks, is Elijah Mitchell. This is a bigger worry for players that have lower draft capital. When you have 6th, 7th round UDFA draft capital, these long-term injuries can be a serious burden to your potential to rebound. Tyrion Davis Price is a 3rd-round pick. Jordan Mason is a UDFA that has shown some promise. And both those guys are going to have 8 weeks to show I'm better than Elijah Mitchell, especially TDP. Now, TDP didn't play in week one because he's been outplayed by Jordan Mason. But this means that TDP, the 3rd-round pick, is going to be on. He's going to be on the roster. He's going to be playing games. And if he shows anything, they're going to shift their gear into him being the RB1 sooner rather than later, rather than putting the ball back in Mitchell's hands in week 10, 11, 12.
Well, I think at this stage, it's going to be Wilson's job to lose. I mean, they've seen what he can do in the past, and they do trust him, it seems. They do still have Kyle Juszczyk. I would imagine that he'll be getting a little bit of love there as well, just because you do still have a bunch of young guys behind Elijah Mitchell and Jeff Wilson, where maybe you don't have that full sense of trust yet. Maybe these guys aren't ready to be handling a big workload in the NFL, but they know Jeff Wilson can do it. This is going to probably end up being just a bigger share for Deebo Samuel. I think he's going to end up getting 6 to 8 carries along with maybe some backfield targets. I think he's going to line up there more often than he already was. And they can just kind of streamline this whole thing through them, which should open up some of that outside stuff for Brandon Ayuk a little bit. But I don't know what they do here. Maybe they go chase a practice squad guy, or maybe they do really have faith in these backup running backs. But like you said, it's really tough, especially if Mitchell's missing a bunch of time for these low draft capital, you know, low invested guys to come back and fully get their work back if somebody else shows that they can also do it in this explosive offense. So obviously week one was not pretty for San Francisco, but that's not the offense we're used to seeing, whether it's Trey Lance or a garbage can, which you couldn't have told the difference between the two on Sunday. So I would imagine Elijah Mitchell will be back in his normal role, but I do think we see Deebo Samuel in the meantime taking just essentially all of the work that Jeff Wilson can't handle.
Yeah. And now let's go into the next couple. We have Najee Harris is expected to miss a few weeks for the Pittsburgh Steelers. What are we doing in with the Steelers' backfield? Is there anything behind him? I don't even know if off the top of my head who the Steelers' running backs are. Oh, is that Jalen something?
It's dead bodies. They were planning on Najee getting like 350 touches this year. Again, maybe more than that, maybe 400. But I think it's just part of the lingering Liz Franck injury for the season.
Hold on, breaking news. He's not going to miss any time. He said he's playing week two.
Well, he can say whatever he wants. I'm guessing that if he's not 100%, they're not going to just throw him out there. But maybe they will. Maybe they just genuinely are going to run him into the earth and let him walk after his rookie contract, which is possible. I just know that it's probably going to be a lingering thing. He may have a pitch count. He may have just a carry count. You know, they're not going to let him get more than 12 or 15, where he's used to getting 25 and like 10 targets. It could be tough sledding for a little bit, especially if he's still playing, even at it's 60 to 70% capacity. That's not ideal to heal something like that. And he really needs time off, but I, you know, it's a business, I suppose. Run that man into the earth. Why don't you?
And we'll wrap up our injury segment with Chris Godwin, obviously coming off the torn ACL, MCL, and now it appears he has a hamstring injury that's going to sideline him for a few weeks. I saw some takes, which I kind of agree with, that he was rushed back from the ACL, MCL. We so often see that players overcompensate for themselves with these injuries, where if one part of their body hurts and they, you know, they're playing through it, then they end up hurting another part. And so this injury does give him a better chance to fully recover from that ACL, MCL injury while also, you know, undergoing like a non-serious injury that is, you know, a tweaked hamstring.
Yeah, the rushing back, I in my eyes, is almost always a negative. I think once Julio was attained, I think you just kind of let Godwin chill for a little bit. Put that man on ice, let him just chill. I know that the two aren't technically connected as far as injuries go, but if he wasn't fully ready, which I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he wasn't, considering he was supposed to have missed like the first month or 6 weeks or whatever it was, and all of a sudden he's just good to go, I doubt it. I get that these are like super athletes, that they're gods amongst men, but no one just magically heals like that when they're on a certain timeline and then all of a sudden, nope, we're just going. So this one is, I don't want it to be concerning. I really don't think that it necessarily is, but if any part of the previous injury isn't fully healed and now he has this to deal with, I think this could just lead to more time away rather than, you know, a quick return from just a hamstring tweak. I think they may end up having him miss a little bit more, especially if Julio is going to be there and take a bunch of that work. But that offense didn't look like the offense we're used to seeing. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I don't think much changes from a dynasty perspective for Godwin. He's kind of been pushed to the back burner again. I feel like his value dropped a bunch. And I'm not sure rightfully so. I get the injury is going to decrease the value a little bit, but I still think he's one of the premier wide receivers in the NFL, and getting to play with Brady, who looked very bad, by the way, which he also looked very bad, I think, the last time we did this on a season opener when he started for the Bucs. I don't know. I think maybe it's a decent time to buy Chris Godwin.
Maybe. I think that part of the reason Godwin has fallen in value is he has gotten a little bit older, and more so, like, people are connecting his value, I think, more so to Brady than they are Mike Evans. So, by Brady, I mean a successful Brady, a Brady that plays better than week one Brady. And I do think that to an extent that is a concern, but I think I'm more worried about the injury in the interim than I am about who's going to be quarterbacking the Bucs in 2023.
Sure. Well, Nathan, before you jump into the booms and busts, let's talk to our friends about Underdog. UnderdogFantasy.com is, well, it was your home for best ball, and now you're all watching those massive points being scored for your best ball teams and Best Ball Mania 3, all of the other options. But let's not forget about the pick'em. There's all sorts of different fun things you can do, not only with the pick'em, but you've got the little, you know, the little three-person drafts. You've got MLB you can play. You've got PGA, NBA, NHL. Obviously, we still have football. But, Nathan, they just make it so easy to have fun, to play all the games you want to play. And as just a nice little special bonus, if you use code ROTOVIZ, ROTOVIZ, on your first deposit, they're matching it up to $100. Think about all that free roll you get. They just bankrolled you for a fall and winter worth of fun on UnderdogFantasy.com. And all you have to do is use code ROTOVIZ.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, let's get into the second half of the show. We have the boom. So we chatted up Carson Wentz a little bit as a possible trade target for Dak Prescott. My worry, I mean, basically we saw Carson Wentz's entire career in that one game. Like, we saw the greats that could be great. We saw the bads that could be bad. And more importantly, we saw the bads, and it was against a bad team in the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's like I tend to be afraid that the fact that if your worst can come out against the Jaguars, it's going to come out against all the other teams as well. So I think that he's not going to get that high passing volume necessarily each game like he did in this game. I think that the storyline of this game is the wide receivers with Samuel, as you mentioned earlier, and Jahan Dotson with two touchdowns. Like, this is a very exciting wide receiver core. And if there's one thing for Wentz to hang his hat on, is that he has a better group of weapons in 2022 than he did with the Colts in 2021.
Yeah, and not only with those pass catchers, but in the backfield, you know, Antonio Gibson, everybody was...
Oh, he's not dead? He's not...
Everybody laid that man to rest. They bought him his coffin, picked out his footstone, and they sent him on to the morgue, and just they let him have it. Antonio Gibson, not dead. This offense looks like it could be pretty formidable. Their downfall might end up being Carson Wentz. But I think we can kind of put Carson Wentz into the category that we had Jameis Winston in a few years ago when he was just slinging the rock out there. You know, just team was either behind or in a close game and they were throwing the football. I think he is going to have the volume regardless of the game, regardless of the score. I think this team wants to throw the football. They have those weapons. You have Gibson, you have JD McKissick, both great pass catchers. You have Terry McLaurin, you have Jahan Dotson, you have Curtis Samuel, you have Logan Thomas, all really strong pass catchers. We see the return of Curtis Samuel and what he can do with the football, doing almost exactly what we wanted him to do when he came out of Ohio State. What he did in Ohio State is perfect for that type of role in the NFL. So we see that return. You know, Carson Wentz is going to be hot and cold. He's never going to be super consistent. He's never going to go out and just flat out win you a game against a good team. But we're not here for NFL wins and losses, Nathan. We're here for fantasy wins and losses. And I think Carson Wentz, with these weapons, is going to be able to do some Jameis Winston-type things with their wide receivers and the running backs. Dare I say Blake Bortles 2.0? I mean, that's kind of what it feels like here. Maybe a little bit less garbage time because they might be able to hang in some games. But I feel like this offense is going to be better than average. I don't feel like that they're just going to fall by the wayside and give us what Jacksonville gave us. You know, they were, aside from a couple of players, pretty miserable. Like you said, the Jags are bad. And I'm not saying the Commanders are good, but they have the weapons to make a bad quarterback look at least average.
Now let's go to some of the running backs. The first one I'll talk about is Dontrell Hilliard. So typically if I see a running back who scores two touchdowns, who's a backup running back, I'm not putting a lot behind that because it's just not something that's sustainable. But what is sustainable for Dontrell Hilliard is Derrick Henry is not really a pass-catching back. He's been a guy who's been running between the tackles his whole career, and for whatever reason, he's not used in the screen game. He's not used, you know, in the halfback wheel or any of those things. Dontrell Hilliard was used in the passing game with three receptions for 61 yards and those two touchdowns. And so I think that the question is, how much does the pass-catching back role matter for the Tennessee Titans? And I'll say it at least this much. It matters enough to be off of your waiver wire. It matters enough to, you know, be solid in like a best ball. Obviously, it's a little bit hairy about calling somebody a best ball play that's off the waiver wire. But if you're in a best ball dynasty league, I would be all over getting Hilliard on my team to try and, you know, get those best ball points, because he's going to have a few of these games where he gets five catches for 45, four catches for 42. You know, that there's going to be those sort of games. And anytime he gets the end zone, that's going to be a start of a week. And so, yeah, I think that he is the most interesting play of the running backs that had big weeks. Obviously, you know, the big names of CEH and Cordarrelle and Hunt all had big games. But I think Hilliard is the most intriguing, as he is a legitimate waiver wire ad.
Well, and what really is working in his favor, Nathan, is this pass-catching locker room is shambles. You're like, yeah, sure, they drafted Treylon Burks early, but he's a rookie. He's going to take time. He only had five targets week one. He did a little bit with them. I don't know what the hell a Kyle Phillips is. He had nine targets and turned it into, you know, a very, very white guy Kyle Phillips line and six for 66. And then, you know, everyone kind of had high hopes for Robert Woods coming back, and just he only had two targets. So I think Hilliard could be that the pass catcher in Tennessee in the backfield we've been chasing for a little while, because it's been Derrick Henry this, Derrick Henry that, and it was always, well, who's going to catch the passes? Who's going to be the backup running back? And we've never had a good answer. I think we might have an answer now. I do think Hilliard should be up there as far as, you know, waiver claims, waiver wire ads, blind bids, whatever. That, you know, obviously the two touchdowns in one game is a little bit misleading, but I think you're spot on in the, he's going to catch a few balls up to, you know, maybe four or five. The targets are going to be there because not only does Tennessee look bad, they don't really have the weapons for him not to be playing, considering what he did in week one. And he honestly looked pretty darn good doing it.
Now, is there a guy that sticks out that you want to talk about between Saquon, Hunt, Cordarrelle, and CH?
Well, I think the Saquon bit, it's just proving all of the Saquon lovers right. And all of the haters, a la myself, are just going to point to the fact that he survived on two long plays and everything else was kind of crap. Aside from
that's literally been Saquon's entire life.
Yeah, so you're going to live by Saquon. You're going to die by Saquon. If he doesn't have a 60-yard play, it's going to be a bad week. That's just Saquon Barkley. It was like that at Penn State. It's been like that in the NFL. He's like the least consistent player I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, he's a super freak. He's fun to watch. That the end of that game was really exciting, the whole bit. There's no safety net with Saquon Barkley. That's an interesting one. I think the big one here is potentially CEH, Nathan. You know, I know we talked about Isaiah Pacheco a little bit. Twitter was going crazy about Pacheco. I still think it's going to be a lot of CEH, whether it's catching passes. I don't know that there's really ever going to be a huge volume in the run game in KC because you have Patrick Mahomes, so why the hell would you run the football? But that was a different version of CEH than we've seen the last couple of years. So I don't want to say I'm fully back on board with CEH, but I think of the booms at running back, his was probably the most impressive to me because he's in the offense we want him to be in. Sure, he's maybe not the most talented guy, but at least now he almost looks like something, like he got it. Like something made sense to him all of a sudden.
Yeah, and with Ronald Jones not being on the active roster, we can operate as if he got cut. Like Ronald
essentially,
Jones,
yeah,
doesn't exist anymore. He'll only exist in the event of a CEH or Pacheco injury.
R.I.P.
All right. Speaking of, you may have claimed your wrongness on Saquon. I will claim my wrongness on the player who I said would be the bust of 2022. One weekend, my bold prediction is incorrect. Michael Pittman Jr. He was very good. 9 catches on 13 targets for 121 and a touchdown. That offense has nothing beyond Jonathan Taylor. So Pittman is going to get those targets. Like the 13 targets, that's not an anomaly. Like I would not be shocked to see Pittman average like 10 targets a game, and you're going to produce, you know, unless your quarterback is just anemic, which Matt Ryan is not that. Like he's not great, but he's not anemic either. So, I think that Pittman is an easy I was wrong there one with this one. I still don't necessarily think he might be any sort of an elite talent dynasty-wise or anything like that, but in his situation, he's going to produce.
Yeah, he's a volume funnel, and I think, you know, that I was kind of in tandem with you on that. That one, I don't know if it's necessarily going to sting at all. I wasn't huge on Pittman. I didn't have a lot of shares, but I wouldn't say I was, like, completely out on him. I will say, though, as far as the Colts go, yes, it's all Jonathan Taylor all the time, and all of a sudden it looks like it could be all Michael Pittman all the time through the air. But let's not forget about Nyheim Hines. He does have the history of catching passes. He's going to get a couple of carries here and there. He could be a really nice add, too, if he is free. I can't imagine he'd be free in most places. But if he is on your waiver wire for whatever reason, make sure that is not happening any longer, because there's going to be weeks. I mean, he could be startable in some cases here. He had 6 targets, converted all of them for 50 yards. So I'm still in on Hines. I know this is a Pittman thing, but we always kind of transition to the other players that are affected by it. So the fact that there really isn't anybody else outside of Michael Pittman, I think Nyheim Hines is probably your de facto number 2 here. Until we see if Paris Campbell can ever come to fruition, if he can stay alive for longer than a week at a time. We'll see if Alec Pierce ever turns into anything. I know he was kind of a hot name, but yeah, as of right now, man, Michael Pittman's a volume funnel. I think if people are still maybe potentially undervaluing him in some cases, he might be a halfway decent buy, but after a week like that, seeing him with a halfway real quarterback, it could potentially be sky's the limit for Pittman just because of the sheer volume.
Yeah, the other wide receiver that I'm interested in here is Devin Duvernay. Our buddy David, he asked me like middle of last week, should I drop Isaiah Likely for Devin Duvernay in redraft? And I'm like, absolutely. Like, in redraft? Why would you even have Isaiah Likely on a roster? But Devin Duvernay, the number 2 wide receiver, and Duvernay is the perfect example of, if this Ravens offense looks like the 2019 Ravens offense, it's wheels up for Duvernay, because there's not much else. There's just Andrews and and Rashad Bateman, who both, you know, obviously looked great in week one. So, yes, you know, the touchdowns inflate his performance a little bit, but I do think that it's more that my excitement about DuVernay is less about how he actually played and more so about that he kind of just secured that wide receiver two spot, and the Ravens looked really good.
My one concern about DuVernay, and I was a fan as well. I think I had like every possible share I could have had from rookie drafts, however many years ago that was now. My one issue is Baltimore's love for running two tight ends and what seemingly they've found in Isaiah Likely. I think that'll end up leading to a lot more two tight ends with Bateman, and then you put whoever in the backfield. And that is moderately concerning for me. I will say that Likely and DuVernay both had four targets, along with DeMarcus Robinson, who also had four targets. Mark Andrews led the team. Bateman was second. And then we know what they are as a running team, whether it's Kenyon Drake, J.K. Dobbins, not Mike Davis, and it seems like Justice Hill might still be living. So I want to be kind of in on DuVernay as like a kind of just like a flyer, because he had success in college, and it kind of seemed like a role that would translate, especially into an offense like Baltimore's, where they are using that intermediate, that underneath stuff, and that's kind of where he excels. But they also prefer to do that stuff with tight end. So I'm hesitant, but I want to be in. I want to like him. I want this to continue. I would love to see him getting 4 to 6 targets every single week, and I would love to see Lamar Jackson throwing it 30 plus times, whether they have J.K. Dobbins or not, because he's a talented enough passer where they're going to do some real damage with Bateman, with Andrews, if one of these other wide receivers just steps up and continues to make plays and score touchdowns. That offense is going to be really tough to stop if they're healthy.
And we'll go to the tight end position real quick. As a draft capital enthusiast, I'm forced to be interested in one O.J. Howard, former first-round pick with the Houston Texans now. But I'll be honest, I'm not interested. Like,
I'm going to tell Russell you said that.
Okay. You can tell Russell that I have no interest in O.J. Howard. And if I could trade O.J. Howard in a third for a second right now, I would do it. Do you have any optimism from O.J. Howard? Like, I think Brevin Jordan's clearly the tight end one there. And O.J. Howard just, you know, ended up getting a couple red zone opportunities.
Well, they had about 73 players get like a target or two targets. So it's Brandon Cooks, and then it's probably like Rex Burkhead, and then nobody. So if you're going to bank on two targets for two catches and two touchdowns, yeah, it's a great time to sell. I agree. Brevin Jordan is the future at the position there. However, if Houston thinks that all of a sudden O.J. Howard is the O.J. Howard prospect we saw rather than the Tampa Bay O.J. Howard, maybe this becomes a standing thing. Maybe they start running the two tight end sets with Howard and Brevin Jordan with Brandon Cooks on the outside. And, you know, that can end up just being messy. But as of right now, yeah, I can't say that there's a definitive like, yep, he's back, he's here. That to me just seems like bait. So if you have him and stuck through and held out, trading him for like a third, I think it's good on you.
All right, well, let's cover a couple people who busted in week one. Which quarterback are you most worried about between Trey Lance, Aaron Rodgers, and Thomas Brady?
Well, once Brady gets his next stem cell shot in his arm, so everything kind of gets back to normal, because it seems like he maybe missed a session, he'll be fine. Rodgers is going to hit you with the R-E-L-A-X, relax. The only worry I have in Green Bay is the pass catchers, but it looks like Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon are going to be in for a long season, each getting about 20 touches per game. I'm most interested in Trey Lance because yes, it was a horrible weather game. Justin Fields didn't really do much more than Trey Lance did, but Trey Lance just looks like a lost puppy out there. I get it's like his first game ever. It's not actually his first game ever. He's played like four, but it seems like every time we see him, it looks like it's his first time playing football.
Yes, but even so, even in his bad games, he does show the like the ever so slightly of like, if he can just figure it out, like he's like amazing. And I obviously we saw less of that with the weather. So yeah, I'm personally giving Trey Lance a weather excuse, and that if he's in perfect weather next week, wherever he's, whether he's in a dome or San Francisco or elsewhere, if he can have some nice grass against a okay defense, I think that at the very least we can see fantasy success for Trey Lance. I don't know about NFL success, but I think we can see fantasy success.
Well, the floor, because of the rushing, you know, that you're built in like 8 points and hopefully a touchdown because of the rushing floor. That's just free. Anything he does with his arm is cake at this point, because I don't think we're really expecting a whole lot. He's got the weapons to keep him afloat. He can't be making the mistakes. I get the weather, you know, but Justin Fields wasn't good either, but they managed to find the end zone a couple of times, and they have nobody on that football team that can play offense aside from Justin Fields. And I think Trey Lance is, we're probably hoping that Trey Lance starts to look a little bit like Justin Fields. Not to say he looked great, but at least Justin Fields has made strides. I think at this point, Trey Lance is just, we're hoping for the rushing to continue to be a success. And like you said, what if he can just figure it out? If he can figure it out like 40%, this could be very, very Jalen Hurtsy. He could stick for a couple of years, and if they end up winning a bunch, he's going to keep that job, because we've seen bad quarterbacks stick for a while.
Speaking of guys who showed us exactly who they are, Jalen Hurts had the most Jalen Hurts game of all time.
He's such a bad quarterback and such a good fantasy asset that it's unbelievable.
Right, but even in that game, he wasn't too great, because everyone and their mother had a rushing touchdown, including him. All right, the other bust that is a concern for me on this list that we have in front of us, Allen Robinson. I think that it's time to worry about Allen Robinson. I tried to cast aside some of the worries where people were just like, hey, like, what if it wasn't just the Bears? And like, there's been a lot of like film showing like, you know, half run routes and lackadaisicalness. And those are things that you shouldn't see week one with a new team. And I know, obviously, you never really know what's going on in a player's head and things like that, but the fact that you didn't see A-Rob going 100% on every route and, you know, have any sort of success week one. I know the Rams obviously had a lot of issues outside of Cooper Kupp, but guess what? Cooper Kupp still made plays. So there was an opportunity to make plays, and A-Rob did not make them.
The worry for me is Cooper Kupp seemed to be option one on every play. They drew up that offense for the ball to go through Cooper Kupp and then to go through Tyler Higbee and then to go through Daryl Henderson and then to go through Ben Skowronek and then to go through Allen Robinson. When you're the fifth read, it's hard to go 100%, especially when you're 28 or 29, however old he is, 30 maybe, and you get brought in to be a difference maker and you don't get a play drawn up for you, that's tough. I think that you're right. I think it could be an Allen Robinson thing, but I also think it might be a McVay Stafford Rams thing where he's just going to keep his binky. He's going to keep his Cooper Kupp, and whatever else happens, happens. But I was the one that said Cooper Kupp was going to be not, you know, worth anything, worth a damn. And obviously that's looking really good after 1 week. I find it tough to believe that another wide receiver, even though we've seen it in the past, is going to be as successful as we want them to be with Matt Stafford because of Cooper Kupp and because they seem committed to at least try to run the football and keep a tight end involved. They showed no interest in getting Allen Robinson involved at all.
All right, anyone else that we want to cover on the bust list for tonight before we wrap up?
You know, it's early for George Pickens, obviously, with Trubisky and the way that offense. Obviously, they have Claypool and Deontay Johnson. I was hoping to see a little bit more of him. Obviously, more from him would have been nice, but even just seeing more of him would have been great. I think Mike Williams just straight up not showing up is very Mike Williams of him. We saw that elite-esque pass catcher last year in Mike Williams, who seemed to be much more consistent, not just the big play guy, not going up making a crazy circus catch and breaking his arm or something crazy. I think that one is stressing me out a little bit. And now with no Keenan Allen, he's going to draw top coverage every single time. You know, they might struggle for a little bit here. Amari Cooper is a tough one. I don't think we have real high aspirations for him with just the gong show that is Cleveland. And then obviously CeeDee Lamb with whoever's going to play quarterback until Dak gets back. But I mean, he had like, what do you have, like 13 or 12 or 13 targets, and he caught like two of them. I don't know how many of those were catchable, but that was a really tough showing for CeeDee in week one. So we'll hope these guys bounce back, because that's a lot of talent. But, you know, some things just maybe aren't meant to be, especially early on in the season when nobody plays in the preseason. Everybody's rusty. It showed. There was a lot of bad football in week one. Some great football, but a lot of bad football.
Yeah, I think CeeDee Lamb, the big one there, is just I'm not counting on anything from him until Dak comes back. And I'm sure that there's going to be a couple games where Cooper Rush finds him in the end zone a couple times, but it seems like it's going to be a losing proposition.
Start your studs, bench your duds, and enjoy the low scoring of fantasy weeks because of your studs.
Alrighty, that should wrap us up for this evening. That's it for week one. We're heading into week two coming up soon. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Ta-da!